So a very warm welcome to everyone joining live today and those catching up on demand. Please use the chat box to introduce who you are, from which organization, and where in the world are you joining from. We are expecting people from all over the world to be present today in this session. And also, please, you may use the chat function to add comments and questions and answers for the panel. So please let me first introduce this session on mobile money innovations to empower consumers, which is part of our Fair Digital Finance Forum, an event that started yesterday and will go until next Friday. Our panel today is this one, and I want to show you the pictures of those who are participating. Our moderator is Anne Pixelon. Anne is recognized as in the 2019 Emerging Payments Award Contributor of the Year and a senior leader under the Innovate Finance Woman in Playtech Power List. Anne champions diversity and end user interest. She's an ambassador for the Payments Association and a judge for the prestigious Payment Association and European Women's Payment Network Award. She's also an advocate for Her Majesty Treasury's Woman in the Finance Charter. Thank you very much for being here, Anne, and also that you accepted to be the moderator. And our panelists today will be Rose Mpofu. Rose is the Chief Executive Officer of the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe, and also a member of Consumers International Council. Rosemary was appointed as a Consumer Protection Commissioner and worked closely with the Commission to ensure the proper implementation of the Consumer Protection Act in Zimbabwe. Also, we have Laura Crowe. Laura leads M-Pesa's product innovation in credit, insurance, savings, and wealth management. Is responsible for the teams developing platforms with the 7 M-Pesa markets can commercialize. Laura has been at Vodafone for 13 years with other roles dedicated to their emerging market footprints in consumer services and external affairs. We have also Maria Lucia Leitão. Maria Lucia is the head of the Banking Conduct Supervision Department at the Central Bank of Portugal since its inception in 2011. She's also the chair of the steering committee of the Portuguese National Strategy for Financial Education. And at the international level, Maria Lucia is the chair of FinConnect, the International Financial Consumer Protection Organization, and member of the advisory board of OECD INFE, the International Network on Finance Education. And our last speaker is Brian Muthiora. Brian is the regulatory director for the GSME Mobile Money Program. He leads the global mobile money policy and regulatory practice, providing tailored support to mobile money operators. He also leads GSME's mobile money regulatory engagements, working with several financial regulators across sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, and the MENA. Without further delay, I hand in this session to our moderator, Anne.
Thank you very much, Antonio Nino. Thank you for bringing us together. And I'd just like to say to everyone here and to the audience that happy World Consumer Rights Day. It's actually, today is our anniversary. So just like to say that. Right, I'd like to say welcome to the panelists. The purpose of this session is for the Fair Digital Finance Forum to bring together digital finance leading voices. And I'm really pleased to be joined by the panelists that we've got here today, who have got a great pedigree to actually discuss this today. So we've got consumer interests, governments, good business interests being represented, and regulators. The forum aims to actually generate debate and to motivate both panel members and attendees to think about how we can accelerate progress towards fair digital finance. To do that, we need to ensure that consumers remain protected and the business community has the ability to act as a catalyst for change. So the format of this session will be, I'll cover the topics that we will explore later, but I'm going to outline the format. Firstly, I'm going to ask the expert panel to have some individual questions that will set the scene. We will then move on to a more informal discussion around some key themes, and we will have a Q&A session. As Antoninino's slide actually said, we've asked you to raise some question Q&As via our chat box, and I would strongly ask you to do that. If you could say where you're from, but also if you've got a particular panelist that you would like that question to be directed to, because the more interactive we can make the session, the better for all of us. So the topics that we're actually going to be covering, the session's titled Mobile Money, Innovations and Inclusion. What we're going to explore is how mobile money has brought about financial inclusion and consumer empowerment, and what has the impact that mobile money has had on reducing gender financial inclusion. Then we're going to go on to how recent innovations have accelerated change, and we will discuss examples of the most successful consumer-centered business models. We're going to look at what protections there are for consumers, and are there any other benefits, such as increasing financial capabilities? And finally, we're going to look at the opportunities for collaborative action amongst interested parties, such as consumer bodies, businesses, policymakers and regulators, to deliver more products for consumer choice and to ensure that adequate protections are in place. So we've got a lot to get through. I want to first, Antoninos actually provided you an outline of why I'm here, but I just wanted to give you to set the scene. Why I'm here is because my background is actually in product design, implementation, but also ongoing delivery in the payment space. I was previously director of product and strategy at Bax Payment Schemes. And what I learned there was the payments arena actually covers a large number of different needs across the end-to-end community. I'm extremely passionate about ensuring that consumers, and particularly those that are financially vulnerable for different reasons, and that could be gender, the topic we're going to cover, have access to a range of products and services to help them manage their finances. We're going through significant change within the payments arena. And with the advent of open banking, there will be greater access to a range of products and services that sit above the existing payment schemes. For example, here in the UK, we're now being encouraged to pay our taxes via our mobile, via access to our bank accounts. The underlying payment scheme, however, in this case, still faster payments. However, it could be a card transaction. We are also seeing a rise in buy now and pay later products, BNPL, which we will cover in our discussions. So what's the benefits? Well, the benefits to the consumer are that I can now pay my bills by my mobile, and the benefits to the businesses are that it's more streamlined payment flow. This could lead to more competitive products and greater savings and reduced costs. The greater risk, however, is that some consumers may be left behind. However, if we actually get this right, mobile money and digital financial products could give us the opportunity to enable anyone who has access to a phone or a computer the ability to transact online. But to do that, I strongly believe that we all need to work together as a community. We need to ensure that we work together and do not leave anyone behind. And if that something goes wrong, that we have the adequate protections for the consumers and users in place. So that was going to be me setting the scene. What I'd now like to actually hand over to Maria Lucia, who chairs the FinConnect, the network of financial regulators from around the world. So she can give you a view from her perspective. So Maria, for regulators, there are challenges to address consumer protection issues related with digital financial services. In your view, Maria, what are those challenges and how are the regulators dealing with them? And I'd also like to know if you see any possibilities for synergies with consumer groups and other stakeholders in defining policies and developing regulation for digital financial services.
Thank you, Anne, for the question. And I'm very pleased to answer your question, but allow me to mention, first of all, that I'm also very pleased to be here today. And on behalf of FinConnect, I would like to thank for this invitation, for the opportunity to bring also a FinConnect perspective to this so important topic, because we all know that not only payments, but the evolution of digital financial services is growing enormously. And we know that with unfolding of this pandemic, we are seeing an increasing role of and weight of digital financial services. And let me come back to the FinConnect program of work, because FinConnect, as an international organization on financial consumer protection, and as an international organization which gathers business conduct supervised authorities from all around the globe, I would say. And obviously, let me also allow to mention, to recall that Consumers International is an observer at FinConnect, and we are very pleased with the active role of Consumers International in our different initiatives. But as I said, from the inception of FinConnect in 2014, we immediately after decided to create a standing committee to discuss the impact of the growing evolution of online and mobile payments and the challenges brought by that evolution to business conduct supervised authorities. And actually, I was very pleased at the time to be the chair of the standing committee, who produced two reports. And one report in 2016 and another one in 2018. And yesterday, I read again the conclusions, takeaways of these reports, and I think they are very much in line with what I would be saying today, which is we realize that it's very, very important to have an ongoing monitorization of the evolution of digital financial services and payments. Obviously, it's a very important segment and first one to be digitalized, if I can use this expression. And we need to have a very comprehensive legal and regulatory framework in place to mitigate risks, obviously, arising from use of digital financial services, because we all know that digitalization of financial services brings a lot of opportunities to consumers, because they can have convenient access, a faster access. They can enjoy also the access to more tailored products. And obviously, they can have functionalities to monitor on real time their financial position. But we know it comes with the price, and the price are the risks and challenges. The risks are very much related with cybersecurity risks. This is that it was the risk that we addressed in the report we produced at FinConnect in 2016. And the risks obviously linked with cybersecurity risks, but also with security risks, phishing, social engineering, more and more, and account hacking, and data and personal theft. All those risks they need to be obviously mitigated. We never can overcome all those risks, but we need to mitigate those risks by having a very comprehensive legal and regulatory framework. But we also know that apart from the risks, there are challenges for supervised authorities. Challenges related to the fact that, first of all, we know that going digital, it can exacerbate some behavioral biases. We know that consumers, they may be tempted to buy by impulse, and then they can get access to credit. Maybe this is some the insights from behavioral economics. They need also to be taken into consideration and design an adequate legal and regulatory framework. And at the same time, let me mention that the regulatory authorities, they have also challenges related to the need to have a legal and regulatory framework with a very balanced approach, take into consideration need to protect consumers and at the same time to allow for innovation. And the innovation has to be flexible, because obviously, and dynamic. Then the regulatory framework has also to be flexible and dynamic. But there are important points that the legal and regulatory framework, if you allow me, I would like to suggest that need to be taken into consideration. One is what we call technological neutrality. Consumers, when going through digital channels, they need to be granted same rights they can get when they go over the counter through a branch. Then there is a need to adjust how those rights should be implemented. For instance, we need to take into consideration that the principle of disclosure of information has also to be taken into consideration when going digital or through a mobile, but that it has to be adjusted to digital environment. But the right of assistance, it's very important to consider that going digital, consumers, they are completely alone. They do not have the employee at the branch helping them to solve questions or to explain things. And to have an adequate framework to provide right of assistance to consumers is also very, very important. But we also know that issues related with the increase in cross-border transactions when those transactions are conducted through digital channels can also raise issues because the legal and regulatory framework, I would say the protection granted to consumers may not be the same according to the country where the head of that provider is located. And at the same time, there are other issues related with the need to allow for the access to consumers to electronic complaints handling and redress mechanisms. These are some of the issues that the legal and regulatory framework should take into consideration. And obviously, there is another one which is very dependent on the national context, which is the supervisory perimeter. As you know, in Europe, based on the payment service directive, all those providers should be within the supervisory perimeter, and it's what we have in Portugal. Even these new third-party providers, initiators, and aggregators of current accounts and so on, they need to be registered at supervisory authority as payment institutions or electronic money institutions. But this is legal and regulatory framework. But just one more point, I will stop, because after the regulatory framework, there is a need to, and an action for supervisory authorities. And this is where FinConnect comes. We are business conduct supervisory authorities, and then we need to oversee the implementation, obviously at national level, according to the specific legal and regulatory framework, how it's going to be implemented by the institutions. And thirdly, to empower consumers, we need to also rely on support of those that are implementing financial literacy. We at Bank of Portugal, we work based on these three pillars, regulation, oversight, and financial literacy. And we work taking these three pillars to develop a comprehensive financial consumer protection framework. But anyway, I understood that you want to ask questions. Sorry.
That's extremely comprehensive, and we are due to have Rose join us, who will actually be, whose experience is around consumer protections. I think some of the key points I've picked up on that, Maria, is actually around ensuring a competitive landscape, ensuring there is appropriate regulation, and I think the word appropriate is very, very key, because inadequate a regulation can stifle innovation. However, I also picked up that you talking about the importance of consumer bodies that working together with the regulators, and that's a topic that we will come into next, and also around appropriate education. That could be a topic of a session. I'm now going to I will sum up right at the end of this, but I think we'll come back to some of the questions that you raised here in our open questions, but come back to Laura now. Laura is the head of financial services at M-Pesa, a leading fintech in Africa. Laura, welcome. Laura, we've heard of you from Maria, from a regulator point of view, we'd now like to really hear from yourself as business. Now, when Maria talked about the regulators and innovation, etc., we're particularly interested to understand about the challenges to address consumer protection issues related with mobile stroke digital finance services, and how can companies develop products and services that are actually consumer-centered, bearing in mind that obviously companies are there to actually have a business requirement. And finally, could you provide us with any examples?
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. And thank you for inviting me to present today a little bit of insight from M-Pesa's experience. For those on the call, M-Pesa is one of the kind of pioneers and leaders in mobile money. So we have over 50 million customers now across 7 of our markets. And I know a lot of the kind of overarching topic today is how kind of mobile money itself has supported financial inclusion. But I guess given that we've had such a big role in that to date, I'm keen to talk particularly around our kind of newer products and services, particularly in the credit space. So likewise, we've also been a pioneer here to enable access to digital finance. And our journey even there started probably about a decade ago. And here we've been able to prove that using customers' mobile money transaction data, as well as their mobile phone data, has been able to provide a useful input into being able to decide on a customer's credit worthiness and then give them much better access to credit. Over the kind of the last financial year, we as a mobile money provider, we actually enabled over $4 billion worth of loans. So, we're able to provide, enable kind of products at mass scale. Now, in terms of the question, I mean, consumer-centric design is at the heart of our kind of product development process, and it really is at the heart, I think, of all kind of fintechs agile product release development processes, is to have that human-centered design. So we do a lot of kind of research within the field. We do a lot of kind of mock-ups in terms of what our potential hypotheses are and get customer feedback around some of those before we then start to iterate some of those product designs, put them into beta format, get further feedback, and then build on more and more features relevant to our customers. I think also what's important, apart from kind of the human-centered design elements in our product development, is also we have to think responsibly about kind of these types of products. Sometimes you can even see from our data that customers might not even be super aware of pricing, or they might be kind of price inelastic because they've had so little access to some of these services to date. And so that means, we want to kind of be thinking maybe even a step above sometimes what even our customers are asking, and start to install kind of key principles. So what we've been developing at the moment is actually a credit marketplace where we can easily bring more financial institutions to plug and play and provide more products. And the purpose of doing that is to bring more choice and transparency to customers. And so in doing that marketplace play, there's a number of kind of principles we've put at the heart of it. So one is customers' exposure. So if they're taking credit out through us, the amount of credit exposure within that platform is available to everyone. And that's really important in terms of trying to reduce over-indebtedness. And it's something, unfortunately, we hadn't had in some of our earlier rounds of products, or we just didn't have that visibility across institutions in terms of what customers were leveraging. We've also done other elements. So we've tried to improve the transparency of the T's and C's for customers to see. We've even kind of put some friction into the journey, something that a lot of providers want to do, frictionless payments. But on the credit side, we've actually done a bit more friction. So customers are really sure that they want to take out that product and can get more access to the cost and pricing to be able to compare to different providers. We also have changed our kind of model in terms of upselling. So we can only upsell in this platform to what a customer asks for. So rather than just setting an overarching limit, which might be a lot higher than what a customer came in to ask to borrow, we actually have an upsell approach that's within a certain percentage of what the customer has actually asked. Another key kind of principle on the platform is around risk-based pricing. Again, probably a wider debate in terms of that and financial inclusion. But the principle here is we do risk-based pricing on credit with the idea to try and really support for our good payers being able to access lower rates of credit and not have kind of, as in our previous iterations where, you know, arguably good payers are subsidizing the bad payers. So there's a number of different kind of actions that we're doing, and we're actually got kind of more in the roadmap to try and enhance even more kind of features within the platform, because really for us, you know, an intuitive product, a transparent product is what drives customer adoption. If there isn't that trust in the product, they're not going to use it. And so we really have to foster it. So it's really, you know, kind of in line with what we want to achieve. There is also a number of actions we want to do kind of beyond just us as a business and cross collaborate with regulators and with other organizations. I can talk to that now, or if you're keen for a bit more interactive, maybe we'll hand over and come back to that.
Thank you very much, Laura. I've really am interested in what you're saying about the responsible principles that you're actually embedding into your product design. I've seen so many times when someone's had a good idea based on tech and they delivered that and actually haven't understood the impacts on the end user. And speaking of which, we're now being joined by, we'll explore those other areas that you talk about later in our general discussion. We've now been joined by Rose. Rose, thank you very much. I know you're extremely busy. Rose, actually, I'm going to turn to you now, if that's okay, because we've heard from Maria and we've heard from Laura. Rose has vast experience in consumer protections, and I think it's really good that she's actually following on from what you just said there, Laura, and in digital finance in Zimbabwe. Rose, so mobile money is actually helping consumers to have access to financial services, but there is a need to discuss how consumer rights can be adequately protected to avoid problems. Rose, can you share your views and share with us what is happening in Zimbabwe, and also share your views about how gender issues and inclusion can be addressed?
Thank you very much, Anne, for this opportunity. Indeed, consumers need to be protected in a great way in Zimbabwe. I will share with you a little bit about the efforts that we are making as consumer advocates in Zimbabwe. First of all, in 2019, in December, the Consumer Protection Act was enacted. It was a bill, so it was enacted into law. So now we do have a Consumer Protection Act. It's now law for consumers to be protected. And it provides for the formation of the Consumer Protection Commission. And so soon after its launch, last year in 2021, we then got the act to be, you know, implemented. The commission was then appointed. So far, we have 8 commissioners out of the 12 who are supposed to be there. So the commission is now working hand in hand with the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe particularly in terms of consumer education. When we actually look at the Fair Digital Finance Services theme for this year, just today in the morning, we had a symposium which drew together regulators across sectors. So we had the central bank regulators, the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. We also had the Bankers Association of Zimbabwe represented. We had the ZimSwitch, who are the custodians of mobile money. We also had the commission itself, the Consumer Protection Commission. We had representatives of consumer bodies. We do have, if you remember, we have what we call consumer action clubs. So we had representatives of the various consumer action clubs, as well as the elderly consumers. We also had the people living with disability. They were there and they also made presentations. So all these people made presentations. Our guest of honor was the Deputy Minister of ICT and Courier Services. He gave a keynote address and it was very important. We had postal and telecommunications regulators of Zimbabwe. We call them POTRAs. They were there. They also articulated the various issues that affect consumers and the various efforts that they, as the regulators, are making to try and ensure that consumers are protected. So you find that the issues really came out very clearly. Regulators are making a lot of effort. Technology is moving ahead in financial services, but consumers are being left behind. So we are making a lot of engagement to try and ensure that consumers should be engaged, should be educated. So the issue of consumer education came out very clearly, that consumers need to be educated to be able to follow and to, you know, to work together with technology, so that they are not left behind. When it comes to mobile money, it's a very, very thorny issue for us as Zimbabwe, because you find that people in rural areas, some of them do not have access to the relevant technology. Some of them are not even banked. They don't have bank accounts. They don't have cell phones. They, you know, they have to use money to get onto buses, into town to get money, using money to get money. So it's a lot of cost, unnecessary cost. Now with technology, we should enhance the use of technology. We should educate consumers so that everyone becomes banked, so that everyone can make use of the necessary technology in order to make their livelihood a lot easier. So there were a lot of discussions. The regulators were also given an opportunity to answer questions. People were asking questions. Our group was about 90 people in attendance at a hotel, and issues really came out. And I must say that it's a very important issue. It's being given priority, even in our work towards Vision 2030. As a country, we have a strategy that we are using. We call it the National Development Strategy 1. And digital economy is being given a limelight. It's one of the priorities of our country to say we want to, you know, to develop our economy on the digital platform so that we don't leave anyone behind. So, the issues were related to say, let's not leave anyone behind. Let's be all inclusive. Let's include all consumers so that consumers can benefit, the livelihood can develop in a better way, and we move together with the global economy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rose. That's a very important message there, particularly about not leaving people behind, either because they're not able to get access. And it's, for me, the really important message I got from you there was about the insurance that government actually do actually help
the consumer bodies to actually put this in an appropriate way. So I'd now like...
Perhaps let me also add that when I made my presentation, we requested the Ministry of ICT to educate consumer groups, and they immediately gave it a thumbs up. So they have committed to train consumers in computers, because many people do not know how to use computers. Yeah. They don't know how to navigate on the digital platform. So they have offered to assist with that. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that came across in some of the other presentations around education, ensuring the appropriate messages. And also during Nora's presentation, she talked about the actual importance of trust. So consumers have to have trust in the products that they're having. And on that basis, I now want to actually move over to Brian. Brian, you've been very patient. Thank you very much for this. Brian leads the mobile money team at GSMA, global organization from the mobile ecosystem. Brian, consumer trust, we've just been talking about there, is one of the key elements for any business and business models that want to access the benefits of mobile money for consumers and companies. How can businesses actually address that consumer trust and the issues that arise, the risks that arise? And what do regulators and other policymakers, we've heard here from the regulator ourselves here and also other businesses, what can they and what do they need to do to ensure that the environment supports innovation and consumer needs?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Let me first just say that I work for the Mobile Money Program, which focuses on working or assisting mobile money providers in, you know, tackling some of their policy and regulatory challenges, as well as in scaling their mobile money services. I think consumer trust is something that has gone hand in hand with the mobile industry in general. We all trust mobile operators with the privacy of our messages. So these are tenets which have been carried on through to mobile money services. I think the mobile industry generally has laid an emphasis on transparency and disclosure, and we've had a lot from other speakers on what's been happening in their sectors or even as regulators. They also place a lot of emphasis on consumer redress mechanisms. There are very good examples of how mobile money providers have embedded transparency and disclosure in their products and services. I think we've heard from Laura on what Vodafone is doing. I think there are other examples of how operators have embedded the best practices of transparency and disclosure in their products and services. And the same goes for consumer redress mechanisms. These are handled at various levels, at consumer touch points, whether this is at the retail outlets or even at agent outlets, where the agent who does the cash in and cash out also plays a role in supporting consumers with any kind of redress concerns that they may have, at least in helping them escalate those redress concerns. I think the industry is also recognizes the importance of consumer protection and came up with a mobile money code of conduct a few years ago, which eventually developed into what we call the mobile money certification, the GSMA mobile money certification. And when the code of conduct first came up, we had virtually all major mobile money groups sign up to the code of conduct or even endorse it. And subsequently, we've seen quite a number of mobile money providers go through the certification process. And this certification process is really all about laying emphasis on consumer protection, fraud prevention, data protection, privacy, and so on. So these are some of the things that the industry is doing. I think there's also a huge emphasis on fraud management and prevention. Just by illustration, you have operators there's an operator in India, Bharti Airtel, which came up with a product known as Airtel SafePay, which provides an additional layer of payment validation for two-factor authentication. Now, this was done specifically to address fraud, or at least for fraud prevention. Mobile money providers are also working hand in hand with their regulators and other stakeholders in their markets to kind of map out the various fraud typologies, in some cases even going as far as blacklisting known fraudsters. So if a particular mobile number associated with a mobile money account has frequently been reported as a fraudulent, as a perpetrator of fraud, then such numbers are placed in a blacklist. I think it's also important to mention that the industry works closely with the public sector, with the regulators and other government agencies in financial education or financial literacy campaigns. And we have examples from that as well for many other markets. I think in Pakistan, you have an example of Jazz Cash, which partnered with the State Bank of Pakistan in promoting financial literacy amongst the youth through an interactive game, which was developed under the State Bank of Pakistan's National Financial Literacy Program. So these kind of campaigns are useful in delivering the message to the last mile, to those customers of these mobile money providers. And lastly, I think Laura also alluded to this. It's important that consumer protection and privacy are embedded in the design of these products. We've heard about statements like privacy by design, where these measures are embedded in the design process of the product, as opposed to embedding consumer protection or privacy concerns as an afterthought after the product has been developed. So it's important that these things are done prior to the development of the product and as the product is being developed. So this is just a few illustrations of how businesses are working with them in enhancing consumer trust. In terms of what the regulators are doing, I think I've given the example of the State Bank of Pakistan's National Financial Literacy Program and working with the providers there. We have examples of other central banks, for instance, Central Bank of Kenya, which years ago worked with the industry to enhance consumer financial literacy on the features of currency. A lot of the time, there might be counterfeit currency that's going around, and most ordinary people, even the agents themselves, may not be very familiar with what a counterfeit or a genuine currency note looks like. So, being able to work with industry to educate them on the known as well as the hidden features of these currencies, genuine currencies, I think is important. And then making tools available, whether it's UV lights and so on, available to agents, just so that they know what genuine currency notes look like. I know they're not speaking here, but the Alliance for Financial Inclusion, which is an association of regulators and public sector actors who are committed to financial inclusion, has also played a big role in enhancing dialogue between their members, the regulators, and the private sector, and especially in some of these topics of consumer financial literacy, consumer financial education, and so on. So there is a role for regulators to play, a big role, and probably speak about this later on, to collaborate with private sector in driving the best practices for consumer protection.
Thank you very much, Brian. Actually, I'm going to start there, if that's okay with you. It's just really to expand on that. And I'd like to really just identify yourself and Maria here. Flora, if you want to add anything, then please do. I mean, you talked there about actually financial literacy, but we're also talking about protections, aren't we? And transparency and working together. And then you finally mentioned about the regulators. What are the opportunities for collaborative actions, not only just with the regulators, the businesses, the
people that are actually on the ground, but this is, we're talking about, it needs education amongst and also consumer groups. How can we ensure that we get all of those stakeholders actually working in the best way to ensure that the consumers are protected and have the services that they want? And I'm thinking here as well is around, talked about if something goes wrong, how do consumers actually know who to go to put it right? Brian, do you want to do something first there?
Yeah, if I may go first before Maria. I think I gave the illustration of the Alliance for Financial Inclusion, which kind of brings together the financial sector regulators and several private sector institutions. But I think this can also be localized. At the local level, there needs to be a recognition first that issues such as financial literacy and financial education are a problem or an issue that needs to be dealt with by all, not just by the private sector, not just by the providers of the service, but the regulators have a role to play, the government has a role to play, and even the donor and developing community have a role to play in enhancing this. So I think what regulators could do is use their convening power. You know, when a regulator calls, you answer. So the regulator can use their convening power to kind of bring this the various actors together for this kind of discussions. Maria.
Thank you. Let me start by saying that we have a colossal task in front of all of us, I would say, because we are seeing the development of a new digital ecosystem where we have a very diverse set of financial products. And we have to have the products very much tailored to the different target groups. And obviously, regulators and supervisors, they need to know that market can offer a very diverse set of products. But then we need to discuss which topics should or issues should we put at the top of the agenda of regulators, supervisors, and financial literacy bodies. And I think that we need to define a strategy. And the strategy, as Brian said, obviously has to be firstly at national level to acknowledge the importance of financial consumer protection, be it in traditional sectors, traditional way of selling, be it now at the level of this a very, very important and challenging environment, which is the digital environment. Because after the authorities at national level define and accept and acknowledge the importance of financial consumer protection and the digital financial consumer protection, then we can learn from each other at the international level. And if you allow me, I'd like to mention that I am very privileged because I'm a member of the task force, G20 task force at the OECD level, where regulators meet and discuss issues and financial consumer protection principles, effective approaches, innovative approaches. This is, I would say, within the context of regulators. Then I'm working at FinConet, and FinConet itself works very closely with the G20 Task Force on Financial Consumer Protection at OECD. But the FinConet gathers supervised authorities. Let me mention that supervised authorities are also very important because they are in charge of overseeing the implementation of legal and regulatory framework. And very often those rights assigned to consumers are very nice, but actually they may not be implemented. Then we have this entity where we can discuss all these topics I mentioned, the digital delivery of consumer credit, payments, even to the use of subtech tools to help financial supervisors. More and more at FinConet, we have all these topics in our program of work. But then we have at the international level also the role of the International Network on Financial Education. The International Network on Financial Education, obviously hosted and coordinated by the OECD, also develops quite a lot of initiatives related with digital financial literacy. And here, let me share with you that Portugal is now designing a digital financial literacy strategy with support of the European Commission and support of the OECD in fee. Because we have been developing different initiatives at national level, raising awareness campaigns to the adoption of strong customer authentication procedures, two-factor authentication procedures, cybersecurity risks, and so on. And also initiatives targeting youngsters to try to call the attention of this tech-savvy segment of population for the need to be aware of the adoption of safety procedures. But we think there is a need for a comprehensive framework, which is the need to design a digital financial literacy strategy. And I've been very often working with the Alliance for Financial Inclusion, where we have been obviously also very closely working with them, which means that we have to work together at the international level. And obviously, when we need to hear the consumers' perspectives, we have consumers international. Always participating, inviting perspective of the industry, obviously, and obviously consumers, which means that cooperation, it's needed. It's essential. Benchmarking, it's essential also at international level. I think we need to learn from each other and very fast, because we need to, as Rose was saying, that we need to not to leave consumers behind. But I would say that regulators and supervisors, they cannot be behind the curve. We need to learn from each other to adopt the most adequate framework, obviously at national level, but we need to learn. This is also my experience since 2007, when I was assigned this task at the Bank of Portugal. I've been learning from all of you, and I think this is a great message. We need to learn.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are, sorry, I'd like to just, sorry, I was talking to myself. I often do that. I just like, that's absolutely on like where we want to go, but I'd like to now switch to Rose and Laura. Rose, just starting with you, we've actually had a specific question that's come through from the audience and just asking about any specific examples of how consumer associations about being able to collaborate with providers or regulators to use their unique knowledge to influence product design. And then Laura, I'd like you then to maybe talk to us a little bit about when you're looking at product design, we're talking about that, you said you'd come back to that question later. Is, you know, are there any issues that you've addressed around connectivity? And in particular, maybe when we're talking about mobile monies, any issues around loss of mobile phones? So I'll start with you, Rose. So about any examples on consumer sort of collaborations that you've been involved in.
Thank you very much, Anne. Thank you for the question that has just come up. Let me say that at the level of the Consumer Association, Consumer Council of Zimbabwe, we've managed to lobby with mobile money service providers and also the regulator, Postal and Telecommunications Regulatory Authority, where we were lobbying to say that they should work together, the service providers should work together to cut down on certain costs. So these were interoperability issues where we were saying some of them were actually putting infrastructure, in fact, all of them were putting infrastructure, which was almost exactly the same. For example, you would find that they would dig and install cables, you know, cables in certain residential areas. So one service provider digs the land, they put a cable, another one does exactly the same, just, you know, neighboring in the same locality. And we were lobbying for a long time to say they should, you know, operate, there should be interoperability where they put just one cable and they all use that same one. One, it will have a positive impact to our environment. It will also have a positive impact on the pocket of the consumer, because these are unnecessary costs for the consumer. So it's very important that service providers work together as much as possible when it is possible. So we've already started seeing some of the benefits, because now the regulator then really enforced that, and they have started working together in certain places. So this
Thank
is an example.
I'm just going to, because we're getting quite close to actually coming to the end of our session, I'd really like to give Laura an opportunity just to come back with what we were talking about there. Laura, do you have any thoughts on the question that I raised? Have we lost? Sorry. I can't hear Laura at the moment, so I think we've just missed Laura. So what I'd like to do is we're coming to the end of our session. There's a really good question.
Yeah,
I think Laura, you've got some connectivity issues there. So I think we're going to have to leave that question at the moment. I've got 2 minutes or 1 minute each person. If you can think about actually what you would take away from today, and then I'll summarize what we've discussed. But there is a question around loss and theft of mobiles. So if Brian, if you could think about maybe doing some of that. So Maria, just one thought from today's discussion, if you want, just to take away.
The need for cooperation at international level.
Cooperation. Rose, one thought from you.
Consumer education is very key. Let's not leave consumers behind. Let's walk with them into this technology, the digital technology.
Fantastic. Brian, one thought from you, and maybe you can use anything about the loss of mobile phones.
Yes, I'd also say collaboration is important, and the need for, balanced regulation. I think that was raised by Maria Lucia. On theft of mobile phone, I really don't think that theft of a mobile phone should lead to loss of the money in the wallet, because that money is protected by a PIN. So unless you already know the PIN, the customer, then theft of the phone should not lead to loss of the funds.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Brian. Laura, have we got you back, or are you still got some connectivity issues?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we can.
I was going to echo what Brian said to that question. I also typed it in. But yeah, I think the key thing is to be hearing, we hear from consumers a lot, but the more we do hear the top concerns of consumers, it enables us to bring it better into our product design. So open to more of that collaboration piece. And I think more that we can work across industry. I think Rose pointed some examples out, but we're also trying to work much more across industry to see if there's things we can do, particularly on some data sharing in the lending side, to try and reduce exposure for our customers and over indebtedness that doesn't help any single player. It only impacts the whole.
Brilliant. Absolutely. I guess I had three summaries from here, and I've got some others as well, but I'll just talk about this. So what we've got here is the key messages we've had. I mean, you've summed it up lovely. We had cooperation, collaboration, education, balanced regulation, etc. All of those are absolutely key. I've got it in slightly longer words so that we can actually then put that slightly out there. So I've got digital financial service that enabled more people to access and important elements, their money in a way. We mustn't leave anyone behind. And that's across all sorts of countries. Consumer protection and empowerment must be at the core of anything we do and should drive innovation. Trust is a key element here. And all our panelists have recognized the important role of establishing dialogues and synergies across all of the consumer advocates, all of the stakeholders involved here. You cannot do it alone. You need appropriate regulation. As Maria, I have seen bad regulation, but when it works really well. You need consumer bodies to actually then translate what's actually being said. It's very complex to the end users. You absolutely need the mobile providers to work together because you do need that core element so that if something goes wrong, someone knows where they can go to and what that means. And Laura, I'm really pleased to hear some of the innovations that you and your company are doing around understanding and building products that are actually built on what the consumer wants rather than what we think they want, and particularly around lending. So I've summarized it up more than I wanted to, but I think it's been an absolutely very good debate, really interesting. Happy to take any other questions later on. I think at this stage, I'm now going to just hand over to Antoninino.
Just to thank you, you and all the speakers, and please stay tuned. As I mentioned, we have a whole week of events. So if you want to go to Consumers International webpage, then you can find the program, and also Matt put a link in the chat. Thank you very much all. Have a great World Consumers Right Day and see you soon.